And now we'll go to part three in our series on personal finances. We've already discussed home refinancing and suggestions for managing debt. Today in part three, our topic is one of the most intimidating to most people, investing in the markets. If you have questions about where to invest, how much to invest, and what to expect from the markets, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or invest a few keystrokes and send us an email, TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us now is Elise Glink. She's a nationally syndicated columnist and the author of 50 Simple Steps You Can Take to Disaster-Proof Your Finances. She joins us from her home just outside of Chicago, Illinois, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
Is investing in the stock market a good idea?
Well, I think over the long run, we've seen that it's a very good idea. In the last couple of years, you would have thought almost anything would be better to do with your money, including sticking it under your mattress. Mm-hmm. In fact, under your mattress might have been the best thing to do the last few years. But if you look over the past 70 years, and I hate to be one of those people who, you know, brings up the last 70 years all the time, it looks like stocks are a very nice way to make good money.
And that last 70 years, of course, leaves out that Great Depression ugliness.
Well, even if you include the Great Depression, instead of seeing an average annual return of, say, 10 or 11%, you would still see an average annual return of maybe 8, 9, 10%. So it's still a pretty good return over the long run. But the idea of investing in the stock market isn't that you just sort of put up a dartboard and throw something at it, although that does work for some people. But for most of us, you want to take a little bit more of a balanced approach to it and use it to balance all your other investments, diversify everything.
And this goes into the entire idea of diversification, which you and many other experts say is exactly what we should be doing.
Right. I mean, I think that anybody, you know, and I include myself in this, anybody who invested in tech stocks took a real beating the last 4 years. We all thought we were smarter than everybody, including people like Warren Buffett, which just goes to show you should never bet against Warren Buffett.
Nope.
Who said, I don't really get all that tech stuff. And even though technology, I think, is here to stay and growing, you know, there are tech businesses that make money like Microsoft and Intel and those that don't and maybe never will. So when you diversify, one of the things that's important is to have a little bit in each basket. Think of it like basket of eggs. So you got some cash, you maybe have a little bonds thing happening, and then you want to have some money in the stock market.
And if the advantages of those three things are, if you've got a little cash, you can spend it. If you've got some bonds, that's slow and steady growth, and stock markets are more speculative.
Well, I think that what really the benefit is that they move out of step with each other. Typically, and again, this hasn't happened the last 2 years, bond markets go up, stock market goes down. You know, they kind of move at different speeds, and they do different kinds of things for you. Bonds can give you a stream of income. In your golden years, you're going to need some cash to spend, in addition to that ever-dwindling Social Security check.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks are there for the long run. They provide a little bit more growth because companies keep investing their profits, this is the idea anyway, back into the business to build it even bigger. So by spreading out the wealth, you create diversification. But another way to diversify, of course, is to, in that stock market basket of investments, take those, and some should be in international companies, and some in big companies, some in small companies. Spread the wealth around.
Here's an email question from Tyson in St. Louis. If there's a particular stock I want to buy and I don't want or need any professional advice, what's the best/cheapest way to buy it? Should I go through a stockbroker or just buy it online myself?
You know, if you know what you want to buy, I don't see any reason why you can't just buy it online. There are a lot of wonderful companies that are online that you can go to. But even big established companies like Fidelity or Merrill Lynch, they offer cheap trades on the web. If you just buy it through their website, you might pay as little as $14 or $20 a trade. You can do even better than that, going to some of the cheapy places and pay as little as $6 to $10 a trade. And I think that's a good idea, because when it comes down to it, it's going to cost you something to buy and something to sell, and you might as well make that something as little as possible.
We're speaking with Elise Glink. She's the author of 50 Simple Steps You Can Take to Disaster-Proof Your Finances. This is part three in our personal finance series. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, or send us an email, TOTN@NPR.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's another email question from Peter Joyce in Madison, Wisconsin. I'd like to know how to invest in euros and yens. I'm convinced the dollar is going to fall because of the current account deficit, but don't know of any way to invest besides flying over to Paris or Tokyo and buying euros.
Well, you can buy foreign currencies in this country. Again, you can trade through foreign currency bond funds. There are a lot of different kinds of ways to do that. And again, you can basically go to any major fund company, Fidelity or Merrill Lynch. I don't want to just mention those. I mean, there's Charles Schwab. There's a million of them out there, and all of them offer those kinds of opportunities. My question to it was Peter, right?
Right.
My question to Peter is, hey, have you thought about some plain vanilla investments yet? I mean, what else are you investing in besides trading in foreign currencies? I have a friend who insists that he's not a day trader, and yet he only makes 10 trades a day. I think I make 2 trades a year. Just, you know, to put it in perspective, you know, it's all well and good to invest in the yen, but hey, what about stuff that's going on here in America? There's plenty of money to be made.
And let's talk about the easiest way to invest in the stock market. And I guess that gets down to the two words, index funds.
Yeah, I mean, index funds are fantastic. You know, Bogle, who started Vanguard, is the one who really kind of created the whole idea of an index fund. Basically, your index fund is a basket of stocks, companies that meet a particular index. And we look to these indexes all the time. We take a look at the S&P 500 index. Where's that today? Well, it's down 17 points or it's up 5 points. Well, wouldn't it be great to just sort of meet that index? Because if you meet the index, you're beating managed mutual funds by, and hold on to your seats here, 85 to 90% of the time.
Wow.
So why the heck are you going to try to be in the 10 or 14% of funds that actually beat the index? Better be meeting the index and not worrying about all the rest of them that are losing. So what people, I think, underestimate with index funds first is that they're terrific investments. They're plain vanilla. You never have to worry about them. They're easy on your wallet at tax time. And best of all, they're really, really cheap to own.
How much do they cost?
Well, this is really amazing. You can buy a cheap index fund and the expenses, the annual expenses to own the fund will be as little as 0.2%, right?
Uh-huh.
But a managed mutual fund, the average is 1.4%. Now, you're thinking that's not that much money. And I grant you, when we were all earning 20% on our funds, it wasn't that much money. Now that we're not earning that much, it's a big share. Get a load of this. If you have 2 funds at $100,000 and for 20 years you keep plugging away the same amount, they earn the same amount, and one is a cheap index fund and one is a more expensive managed mutual fund, the cheap index fund will be ahead $175,000 after 20 years.
There's another kind of a fund, and you hear about it all the time on TV, no load. What's a no load fund?
A no load managed mutual funds have other kinds of expenses sometimes associated with them. In addition to the annual fee, you have what's known as a load or a no-load fund. Load simply means there's a commission charge, sales charge that's levied sometimes at the front when you, that would be a front load, front end load, when you go into a fund, or an end fee when you come out of it, when you sell, you get hit. And they can be as much as 6 or 7%. On top of what you're paying every year to manage the fund. And you know where that money goes?
No.
Right into the pocket of the mutual fund manager.
Hmm.
They make a whole lot of money. It's not a bad business to be in if you're a good stock picker.
Let's go get a phone call. And this is Dino, who's with us from Iowa City.
Hello, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for your guest. I'm 20 years old. My wife and I have about $10,000 we're seeking to invest. She would like to keep it in a money market fund at our local bank to keep the funds accessible, maybe to pay down debt for future expenses. I'm looking a little more long-term and would like to invest in a mutual fund. Just wanted to get your input from your guest.
I'm wondering, do you have debt right now?
Yeah, actually we do.
Okay, so how much are you paying in interest on that debt?
Probably about $150 a month.
Okay, you are never, first of all, congratulations on saving $10,000, but you are never going to get rich by saving this money at 1% in a bank account, in a savings account, or if you're lucky enough to get that, maybe it's 0.5%, where you're paying out 4, 10, 15, 30% in interest on a credit card debt. So take whatever you need out of your $10,000 and pay off the credit card debt, and then don't charge up there. And then take the rest, and you can put as little as $50 a month and open up an index fund account, a brokerage account, and then put the money into an index fund and then just contribute to it every month. And really, you are so young, you've got so long to go that when you get there at 65, you're going to be awfully wealthy.
Dino, if you wanted to hear more specific advice about debt management, you can go back and listen to that on our website, which is at www.npr.org. I think that was part one of our finance series. There's also part two there. You could check that out. That was on refinancing your house. And we'll be back with more in this series as time goes by. Elise Glink, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Nice to be here, Neil. Thanks.
She'll be back for part four when we talk about saving for retirement, not unconnected with investment, but now you know how to do that. Anyway, we'll be back. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.